So multi-tiered storage architectures are increasing popularity where more and more use of SSD and storage arrays. And quality of service in traditional storage arrays is already hard. And with the increase of another dimension of having a different types of storage devices, the quality of service could actually be a much harder problem to solve. In my presentation, I will try to convince you that the current approaches for quality of service and scheduling does not work well with multi-tiered architectures, and also will propose a new approach to actually solve some of the problems. So I'm Ahmed Nabi, and this work was done with a collaboration with Hui Wang from Rice and Ajay Gulati from VMware, and my advisor, Peter Varman. So this is a model that we used for the system where we have a number of clients, end clients, where each has its own queue to queue its requests. And then we have a scheduler on a server side, and then we have a black box of a multi-tiered array with its own queue and its own storage devices of SSDs and hard disks. The thing is, the scheduler does not know each request where it goes. Is it to an SSD or to a hard disk? So basically, we're trying to design a scheduler at the host side. So the problem is how to provide quality of service in this environment. And let's do that with an example. First, how will fair scheduling would work? So in this example, we have an extreme case where we have two clients, both with the same weight, and each one, client one is only hard disk bound, and client two is only SSD bound. And we have a fair scheduler, and for the sake of this example, the multi-tiered storage array has a queue of three. But again, the example could be expanded to a bigger queue. And the SSD has a service time of 1 millisecond, and the hard disk has a service time of 10 milliseconds. So at time zero, the fair scheduler, looking only at fairness and looking only at weights, and as both of them has the same weight, it will basically start interleaving between the clients, interleaving the request to be dispatched to the array. At the beginning, we'll always assume that client one is the one that will win the tie whenever both of them can be dispatched. So at the beginning, we have request one for client one, request one for client two, and then request two for client one. And then each will be dispatched to the SSD and hard disk request ones. After 1 millisecond, the SSD would finish, and we have an extra space in the queue. Because we already dispatched from the client queue request two of client one, we will dispatch request two of client two. And again, the SSD will service it, and after 1 millisecond, at time 2 millisecond, the SSD will finish. And then, this time it's the turn of client one. So request three of client one will be dispatched to the storage array. And we can see that the SSD in this case is completely idle. In fact, it will, on a long run, it will be idle for 9 milliseconds out of each 10 milliseconds. So is actually the fair scheduling doing reasonable? It's doing how it's actually designed, but definitely it's not reasonable. So fair schedule has its problems. What about others? So what about time-sliced schedulers, where we allocate a time quanta in proportion of client weights? Again, both clients has equal weights, so the time quantas will be equal. And for each time quanta, the system, the client will have the whole system. Again, in this extreme case, we have each client only targeting one device. But again, it would be easy to formulate an example where the problems also arise. So between client one and client two, each will have the whole system, and this is not efficient because a client may not be able to fully utilize the system. So what about, so we have a low utilization and both devices will be idle for large intervals in this example. So what about queue-based schedulers, where we allocate queue slots in proportion of client weights? So what if client one, which is only hard disk bound, has a weight, higher weight, and client two has a weight of one, so 2-to-1. So again, for this example, with a queue of 3, 2 slots for client one and 1 slot for client two. And then we would see that although this may work, but what if client one went idle? We will see that there will be a misuse of the storage queue, where most of the queue will be actually empty. But at the same time, we can change solutions for that. We could implement like a variable queue size. And we can do that by keep monitoring the behaviors and variably changing the queue partitioning. And it's an interesting problem that would be interesting to actually solve and look at. So from the three types of schedulers that I talked about, there are problems. So we actually introduce, so static queues can go low. So hopefully you have been convinced about like there are problems and limitations with the current techniques to address quality of service. And we present one more approach that we are thinking about to handle these problems. We call it reward scheduling. So the main goals of reward scheduling is to provide quality of service through fairness and to increase the throughput and utilization of the system. And the key ideas is we reward the clients with cheaper IOs, and we track the IO latency of each client separately. And at the same time, we try to allocate in the ratio of the client's throughput if they are running alone on the system. And we call that entitlement. So some details about the algorithm itself. So we implemented an algorithm that uses a tag-based scheduling, where each client queue has a tag, and the tag represents the scheduling priority. The lower the tag, basically the more often and the higher the probability that you will be dispatched. And the scheduler selects the queue with the smallest tag. And we monitor the service time of client requests, and we increment the tags using measured service time of the client and the weight of the client. So PyJ is the measured service time for each request. And then we use the function update service time to calculate the average service time for a client over a window of requests. So using the same example where we have client one and client two each targeting a single device, and after knowing the service time of each client, how would a reward schedule would work? So at the beginning, request one of client one and request one of client two will be dispatched to the queue. And then instead of choosing request two of client one, because client two has cheaper IOs and costs less, it will have a lower tag, a smaller tag, and it will be dispatched. And then it will be dispatched to the devices itself. After 1 millisecond, again, this SSD finishes the request and starts the second one. And again, we have an empty slot. Because the SSD is much slower, so the tags of client 2 will be still smaller. So again, we will dispatch request 3 of client 2, and so on. So a higher utilization of the SSD and the whole system, and the client with the lower latency actually gets a higher effective weight. So we did some preliminary evaluation of our method, and we'll talk about it right now. So the setup is we did two implementations. One, it's simulation-based, and a Linux-based evaluation, where we actually implemented it in the user space. We did it for three different cases: variable hit ratio, which we define it by the percentage of requests that actually are to be serviced by the SSD, and variable read-write ratio inside the request itself, and variable weights. And variable weights, the details is more in the paper. So the first experiment is we actually compared reward scheduling with the Linux CFQ scheduler. The experiment setup is basically workload 2 has a constant hit ratio of 0.4 throughout the experiment, and workload 1 at time 200 changes its hit ratio from 0.6 to 0.9. And at time 400, it goes back to 0.6. Basically, it actually sped up and used the SSD more. So if we look to the CFQ, Linux CFQ scheduling, we would see that between time 200 and 400, workload 1 actually increased in throughput. Its throughput increased. But at the same time, workload 2 slightly increased at the same time. Although the only change was in workload 1's hit ratio, and workload 2 gained an extra capacity generated by workload 1 in the beginning. If we look at reward scheduling in the same setup, between time 200 and 400, workload 1 is the only one that increased in capacity, and it actually increased more than CFQ. And workload 2 didn't change at all. So reward scheduling gives us an isolation between workloads and the total higher throughputs, a higher system throughput in total. Then the next experiment is simulation only, simulation where we have two clients, client A and client B, and we have a multi-tiered array of one SSD and one hard disk. The SSD service time is 0.2 milliseconds, and the hard disk is 10 milliseconds. And we also implemented, we also used the Linux implementation. We had an SSD, an Intel X25, 80 gigabyte SSD, and a 1 terabyte Seagate. So we varied the hit ratios for client B while maintaining client A's hit ratio to 1. So client A is only SSD bound and client 2 increases. So for the simplest case where both clients has the same hit ratio of 1, the entitlement of A, where if it's the sole user of the system, will be 5,000 IOs per second, basically 0.2 milliseconds per IO. And the same thing for B. So the ratio is 1 to 1, which is obvious. But if we see, if we actually go to hit ratio of 1 to 0.5, we see that the entitlement of A is still 5,000, but the entitlement of B is 200 IO per second. This is because the bottleneck is actually the disk. So 100 I/O from the disk and only 100 I/O from the SSD. And the ratio in this case will be 25 to 1. And the simulation actually get a 25.1. If we look at the numbers for the Linux-based evaluation, we would see that they are actually comparable to, the ratios are actually comparable to the simulation system. The third experiment where we varied the read-write ratio, we had two workloads, and both of them are only SSD bound, and they started with 50% read-write ratio, read ratio, and then at time five, workload one increased its read ratio to one, so it only makes read requests. And the SSD speeds are actually different for reads and writes. Reads are much faster. So will reward scheduling would help to give more bandwidth to workload one? That's what we want to know in this experiment. So if we use a queue equal to one in the storage array, we will see that workload one is the only one that gets rewarded from that speed up. And workload two didn't get any rewards. And actually it maintained its the same throughput. But when we go to queue equal to eight, the allocation when the disk queue is set to eight, we see that workload two actually gained some got some of the gains, and the reward of workload one has decreased compared to the first where Q equal to one. And the reason of that is the queuing time in the storage queue decreases the differentiation between both clients, and the reward will be less. And this actually shows one of the limitations of directly using the average latency as the estimator. So the differentiation becomes less due to the queuing delays. So right now I'll talk about the open issues and conclusion. So the open issues that we would like to investigate and to how to better measure the response time or the service time, where how we can isolate the queuing delay to better serve the clients that get rewarded and the clients with the better behavior and cheaper IOs. And actually, can we make the queue slot-based techniques work? And the third thing is how the interaction between cache management and scheduling would do, how like cache at the storage array side, how it would change our results and how it affect our results. At the end, the existing approaches are insufficient for multi-tiered arrays. Reward-based allocation is one alternative to get higher efficiency with fairness. Other approaches can potentially be adapted to work, like queue slot based. And we hope to encourage future work in this area. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. Very interesting work. I think it's a great approach, and I love this area. So this is a question that I guess goes to your open issues. So in your experiments, you showed a constant hit rate. You know, you varied the hit rate. But in a caching-based system, the workload will determine what the hit rate is. So for example, in many cases, you use a frequency or a recency-based metric. So basically, if an IO is doing more, or a workload is doing more IO, it'll get more of the cache and less vice versa. It seems like in that kind of a case, this approach might be unstable, because as you throttle back on the workload because it's getting more latency, it means it will use fewer IOs, which means it'll get less cache, which means it'll have more latency. You know, it's a feedback cycle. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, how do you address that? Or there, you know, does this just mean in some scenarios it's useful, in some scenarios it's not? Or
Well, maybe if we have more knowledge about like each request hitting which device, that would be a good idea. Like trying to ask the storage array manufacturers to like get this data. Maybe like if you know that, you would actually change your scheduling scheme and put this parameter in your calculations, so that although you may actually not hitting the cache, hitting that specific more, but you would schedule more of that because of it's cheaper.
That sounds very reasonable. Although I think that'd be a very interesting thing to explore. Although I think it would look probably very different if you were able to get that piece of information out. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is more of a question, not a comment. How would the picture change if the queue that is inside the device was sized for 10 units of work here or 10 units of latency on the hard drive and 1 unit of latency on the SSD? So instead of 3, let's say it was 11 or add 1, 12.
Okay, so for the first example where the speed difference is actually 10, if you have 10 and 1, both of them will be fully utilized. But at the same time, like this is an extreme case. And you can always argue that the solution is to put more queue size and maybe more cache, a simple solution for anything is to put more. But
where I'm going with this is the scheme that you came up with is very good. Mm-hmm. But a lot of storage, where you know these storage systems are shared across multiple servers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, measuring I/O latency, it's on a single host, may not take into account the fact that there are other hosts that are connected to the same thing. So, a right way to solve this seems to be to make the queue inside the device correct
Yeah, well, the thing is, you may actually deal with each server as a client, like for that, and you have one unified scheduler for that storage array. So, each server or each server is dealt with as if it's one client, and each server may have its own number of virtual machines. One layer of abstraction.
So even if you have multiple servers, each with the two queues that you described, your scheme would still work?
This time it will be on a server, like a complete server level, where the aggregation of all the requests from the server, is it cheaper than the other server or not? But definitely, we can try and define different measures on different levels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So actually, I have a clarification question on one of your experiments. When the hit rate for workload B increased, we saw that workload A did not get more throughput out of the system, right? Do you remember that graph where the hit rate of workload B changed, increased to 0.9?
Okay, in the CFQ. Okay.
So is my understanding correct that in there you actually sacrificed some system throughput, because when the hit rate increased, some hard drive resources would have been freed because now more workload is going to SSD. I understand workload A was isolated. It didn't see any improvement, but was that at the expense of sacrificing system throughput?
Well, the thing is, the disk is... the disk utilization is almost always equal to 100% because it's inherently slow. And so we more think about a cheaper in the terms of can it be done faster? So it's always the bottleneck in the hard disk, not in the system. So what the hard disk is the one that's limiting us usually. And in most of our experiments, the hard disk utilization is almost 100%. So,
any other questions? All right, let's thank the speaker once again.
Thank you.